Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the Virtual CISO Moment. Dave Hatter joins us today. He's a cybersecurity consultant for Intrust IT. He is also the mayor of the city of Fort Wright, Kentucky. Dave, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Greg. I'm happy to be here and looking forward to our conversation today.
I talk with a lot of different people. I've talked with people around the world, all the way down to Australia. I think I've gotten most continents, not on Antarctica, but I don't think I've ever had a mayor on here before.
Well, I hope I live up to your expectations, and I can tell you it's an interesting job, and frankly, I can't wait for it to be over.
Okay, well, we'll get that in a moment, but I would love to hear about your IT and cyber journey, how you got started and why you got started in IT and cyber. I mean, when I was a kid, I didn't really say it's like I want to be a cybersecurity engineer, and part of the reason for that is that it didn't exist at the time. But really, I think I actually, I don't know if I've told people this, I wanted to be a news weatherman. I have no idea why. That's what I want. But what got you into it?
Well, Greg, way back in the day, you know, I'm old enough to have grown up playing a lot of video games. You know, I'm an Atari guy. I remember the arcades, that kind of thing. So I've always had an interest.
2600?
Atari 2600. Heck yeah. Amen. ColecoVision, Odyssey, I went through them all. But, you know, so I always had an interest in computers from that standpoint. And when I graduated from high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I originally thought I wanted to be a chemist, but I realized after a couple semesters, I would never graduate from college on that path and had to find something else I could do. I liked computers, kind of had an interest in that, figured, okay, this is the mid-80s. Computers aren't going away, seemed like a good career. And I kind of took to programming. And I spent most of my career as a software engineer, about 25 years worth of that. Consultant, owned a business, did a bunch of different stuff, but primarily around building custom software for businesses. And to be honest with you, Greg, I kind of have an interesting perspective on this. For most of my time in the business, while as a company, we would try to focus on the security of our solutions. And, you know, you look at things like the OWASP Top 10. Some of the items on the OWASP Top 10 have been on the list for 20 years, things like True. SQL injection, you know? Mm-hmm. And I started to see these patterns. I've also been an adjunct at a local college in Cincinnati teaching programming for a long time. And I knew like we didn't really focus on the security aspects of the programming, but I would generally, while we would try to focus on that, I would often see the security people at our clients as my enemy, because suddenly at the last minute, they come rushing in, oh, wait a minute, you can't deploy that without doing this, that, or the other. And next thing you know, they're blowing up my budget. I'm missing my timelines. But over time, again, looking at things like the OWASP Top 10 and seeing the same recurring themes, and as if you look at like Mark Andreessen's quote, software is eating the world. Well, it really is, right? Everything is a so-called smart device now. Everything has software in it. I started to say, you know, we have not just risk to businesses from bad software, but we have societal risk, right? It's endemic across the entire society. The power grid relies on software. The transportation network relies on software. I'm like, you know, perhaps someone like me who mostly saw the security people as the enemy because I was more focused on functionality and deadlines and so forth could maybe make a dent and try to break down some of those barriers between the software people and the security people, because our entire society depends on software now. So that's about, I don't know, 8-10 years ago, started to get more interested in the security aspects of things. And about 5 years ago, kind of broke off the software engineering stop. I mean, I still dabble in a little bit. I still teach it at that college, but I'm not a software engineer anymore. I'm primarily focused on trying to help businesses protect their assets. So that's kind of how I got to where I am today. And I, frankly, I'm appreciative of the opportunity to talk about this stuff because of the societal risk we all face due to bad software.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, back in the day, to your point, where we had like little software islands, I guess you'd call it. Like you had one device that might have had some sort of software, another device that maybe, and they were few and far between, but now everything's interconnected. And if one thing goes wrong, I had an experience this morning, and I have no idea why. I made a mistake. I bought a Lightning to HDMI connector, a cheap one from, I think it was China or somewhere, and I didn't get an Apple one, and it needed to have software installed on the iPhone in order for it to run, and it wasn't working right. It wasn't syncing with the TV, and it almost completely ruined my spinning on a bike this morning, because I was trying to connect my phone to a TV so I could use the program Zwift. And at one point in time, I got to the point, whatever happened to just sitting on the bike and riding? we've gotten so into technology, and then to your point, the software as well can be an issue. And yes, it is a big risk to society and a big risk to small and mid-sized businesses as well. And we'll touch on the small and mid-sized businesses in just a moment, but I'm going to ask you what you think is one of the most significant risks, or several significant risks, to small and mid-sized businesses in the cyber realm.
Well, right off the top of my head, I think probably the most significant risk at the moment really is deepfakes and voice cloning in particular.
Okay. Well, hold that thought for a second. Sure. Let me roll the ad and we'll get back into deepfakes. I love that idea. Hang on a sec.
The virtual CISO moment is brought to you by vCISO Services, a leading provider of quality and experienced virtual chief information security officers for small and mid-sized businesses. Check them out at vcisoservices.com.
See, now usually I run that to get the person to think about it first, but now I got to think about your response there for a moment. So a nice little pause. Deep fakes. I don't think that I've had that as a response to that question on the podcast as of yet. So let's talk about deep fakes. How is that a big threat for small and mid-sized businesses?
So, Greg, I think all the standard stuff, ransomware is still a huge problem, phishing. But I think phishing in particular, when you look at its various forms, whether it's email, text, voice, whatever, these things are, supercharged by deepfakes and synthetic media in general. So a lot of people really haven't heard the term synthetic media. It's kind of the catch-all term for content generated by tools like ChatGPT. But when you look at that from a deepfake perspective, now I'm going to use these tools, the DALL-E, Midjourney, whatever. I can create audio, I can create video, I can create text, I can clone someone's voice. And I have some firsthand experience with this, which I'll tell you about in a second. I can use these tools to really supercharge my attacks. All the old school tells, when you get the phishing email or the text or whatever, it's full of grammar errors. The language doesn't seem right. All that goes away because now, even if I don't speak English, I can use these AI-based generative tools to generate incredibly realistic content. I can personalize it. I can do it at scale. So now I can, feed this kind of content into large-scale phishing attacks, spear phishing attacks, whatever. And a lot of the stuff that used to trigger red flags from human beings are gone because the quality of this content is amazing. But the voice cloning in particular really has me concerned because I don't think most people, and I'm sure you deal with a lot of small and medium-sized businesses yourself, where they're not really tuned into the latest threats out there. Mm-hmm. They don't realize how easy it is right now to go do a search online and find a website that will allow you to A, copy someone's voice or upload someone's voice. B, costs nothing. C, requires no previous knowledge. And C, or D, no previous experience. You can use a site like Coqui. This is one I just found with a random search. You can go in there, and with about 3 to 7 seconds of someone's voice, you can clone it very, very accurately. The site is free. I did it in less than 45 minutes for a local reporter here in the Cincinnati TV market. We cloned his voice to demonstrate how easy it would be to do the grandmother scam, where we literally, I type in, "Hello, Grandma, this is John. I need your help." And it's not perfect, but we did this in less than 45 minutes. He showed up. I just found this random thing, played with it a bit before he got here. We recorded his voice reading a sentence that they gave us to read. And I would say it's at least 85% accurate. Anyone in the Cincinnati market would think it's him because they hear his voice on TV all the time. But my real point is, Greg, because then I'll get the question, well, how would someone get my voice? I don't use social media. I'm a Luddite. You'll never get my voice. Okay, maybe. Do you have voicemail? Is there a greeting on your voicemail? Because if there is, I can call your phone number, and in less than 45 minutes, I'm you. I'm telling your CEO to buy, or your CFO to buy gift cards, or your accounting person to do a wire transfer, or whatever else there is. And going back now to like my mayor job, we get hit with all kinds of phishing scams all the time. Everything under the sun has happened. There's all kinds of fraudulent emails and phone calls and stuff like that with the gift card scams and these sort of things. But I've been really trying to raise awareness about this to make the employees understand, even if they get a quote call from me with a voicemail instructing them to do something, my voice is easily accessible. I do a lot of things like this with you here today. You could go watch a council meeting and snag my voice off a meeting. I think people really underestimate how easy it would be to get a hold of someone's voice. Again, voicemail, for example. And then B, these tools are stunningly good, readily available. And if you go out and you just search on this, you'll find the FBI is warned about this. There's already lots of real world incidences of scams that are using this voice cloning technology. It's a real thing. It's happening right now. And people really need to be aware and warn other folks that this is real.
So I would think that a way to counter this would be, I'm just kind of thinking through it in my, just in real time. We tell people, if you're not sure about something that comes in, to verify, call a number that's out of band, something that's not in the number. Is it safe to say that that sort of advice would be the same here? It's like, I get a voicemail from you and you're asking me for something for whatever reason that I didn't expect it. And it sounds a little bit off. Maybe I should just call you back anyway on your cell phone that I know that isn't published just to verify for anything that comes through. Is that the only thing we can do?
Well, yeah, I think that's you're definitely on the right track there, Greg. I would suggest two other things. First off, again, appreciate the opportunity to talk about this and try to raise awareness, because I think most people don't even realize this is a possibility. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize when they get the call from their grandson in the middle of the night that claims to be in jail and they need $15,000 in gift cards to get out. New York Post has a story about a woman who was almost defrauded out of $15,000 through this exact scam. You got to be aware that, you know, it's probably a scam. This is a thing now, right? Another thing you can do in terms of like a real-time type of call is pay very close attention, because you might have someone who literally has someone's voice and is typing their responses in and waiting for the model to generate a response. You'd be surprised how fast this works. But if you start to hear weird pauses in a conversation, you know, the voicemail is one thing, but if someone is trying to scam you real time, if it takes a second or two to get a response, well, it's probably because they're waiting for the machine to generate that voice. So look for those kind of tells. Another thing you can do is have a prearranged code word, phrase, or something with your family members, right? Like, you know, red platypus or something.
How did you know mine?
Lucky guess. Lucky guess. You know, it's amazing what you can find on the dark web.
Yeah, I guess so.
But, you know, something like that. But yeah, I think your ultimate advice is the best advice: always go out of band, right? If you get a voicemail, if you're experiencing some kind of real call like this, you know, understand it's a possibility that it's a scam, and then go out of band. Call that person using a number you already know. Don't click the links. Don't use the phone numbers they gave you, because you might be getting a boiler room in India with someone right. Who's using this tool, you know, to further scam you. Are you at all familiar with an online scam the scammer guy called Kit Boga?
Sounds familiar.
He has a YouTube channel. I always like to throw him out there, because not only, especially if you're in the business, is he extremely entertaining, but it's very insightful to watch him scam the scammers, because you'll see that A, they are unbelievably creative and devious, and B, there's literally no level they will not stoop to steal your money. And when you have people who aren't in the business watch these things, they're just like, wow, I can't believe that they went to all of these links. You know, they'll get more scammers involved and they'll redirect you to the local sheriff's office. And, you know, they've looked up the sheriff personnel from the local website. I mean, these people will do their homework. And it's A, he wastes an enormous amount of their time, and eventually they figure out they're being scammed, and then they go off, and it's kind of funny. But it really is pretty insightful and instructive for folks to understand how prevalent these scams are and how good these people are at scamming you. So you throw this voice cloning thing into the mix, and now you're talking to someone that sounds exactly like your grandson or your spouse, or maybe it sounds like they maybe have a little cold or something. It's a wild, wild world. It's getting crazier by the day. And it's so important for people to understand that sadly we're at a place now where you really can't believe anything that you see or hear. You've got to go out of band to try to independently verify it.
I like all of the points of advice, but as you were talking about the one with the pause, the security paranoia in me clicked in thinking about AI. It's like, we're probably like this close to where that's not even going to be an issue anymore. I'm talking on the phone, whatever is receiving it, the person's not going to have to type the response. There's going to be some AI that's going to determine this is the right response for this and do the conversation themselves. And then it's going to come out in the person's voice. The person who's actually scamming you, all that they're doing is they're just dialing the number and letting AI take care of the whole thing.
Remember, Greg, just because you're paranoid, it doesn't mean they're not out to get you, because they are.
They are. That dog right behind me is always behind me trying to get me.
I think you're exactly right. I am unaware of any tool that can respond like that in real time. Doesn't mean it's not in some CIA or NSA or Chinese Communist Party lab or something. But again, I can tell you from playing with it here with this interview we did, once his voice is in the model, I literally can type in a sentence, hit play, and in about a second or less, it will play whatever I typed in. And that's why I'm, you know, warning about that. If you're having a conversation with someone and there are weird pauses in the response that don't seem normal, especially if you've talked to that person a lot, strong indicator that you're being scanned by voice cloning. But I think you're right. In the not too distant future, I would say certainly within 5 years or less, the technology will have progressed to the point where there won't be any pause. It will be talking to you real time.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was within a year. I just seeing the proliferation of LLMs and the use of the most popular ChatGPT, it's like somebody's going to be able to figure that out. But I have to ask, let me shift gears for a second. Never had a mayor on here before. Being in government service and politics is not exactly the same as being in IT and cyber, but you had mentioned before the show that there actually are a couple of connectoids there. Are there connectoids between them and what are they?
Well, I would say the main thing that connects it really at this point is, you know, governments of all sizes are also increasingly dependent on technology like the rest of us, right?
Sure,
like, you know, Fort Wright is my hometown. I've lived in Fort Wright my whole life. I never dreamed or desired to be the mayor. I happened to get on city council a long time ago, and then I was the only fool who said yes when everyone else on city council didn't want to step up and be the mayor when the previous mayor resigned. See, I'm an idiot, Greg. When he said, you know, I don't really want to do this anymore, I wasn't smart enough to go,
you were in the Army, and I was in the Air Force, and the one consistent advice that people gave us is don't volunteer for
That's
anything.
Right. And never
I remember sitting in the day room. It's like one of our squad leaders had just been fired. They'd gone through like a third of our squad already, it seemed like. They'd gone through several squad leaders. We had four. And the training instructor is like, who's going to take over? And nobody's saying anything. And it's like I heard this voice emanating from me. It's like, fine, I'll do it. And I'm like, will you shut up? I mean, literally like two people on my shoulder type thing. So I get it. I understand.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I'm being a bit facetious. It's cool. It's my hometown. My parents live here. My kids live here. I love the city. I've literally lived here my whole life. Again, never planned to be the mayor. But like when I first got elected to council, everything was paper-based. We didn't even have a website, you know, mm-hmm. Everything was done by hand. And over the last now, I was on council for 16 years. I've been mayor for almost 9 years. You know, we've tried to automate as much as possible, like most small businesses. We have interactions with other government agencies that rely on technology now. So, you know, we have a lot of sensitive data. Now, you get into this weird realm in government of most of the data we have is all public record anyway. And if you file a public records or an open records request, most of it we can't hold back unless there's some other type of regulation like HIPAA that would protect it, or, you know, active police investigation or that sort of thing. But like a perfect example would be police body cams. When I first became mayor in 2016 or 2015, rather, you know, I insisted we're going to get body cameras. It protects the officers. It protects the public. It's good for everyone. Yeah. Now, that's a pretty significant expense in a city of 6,000 people with a $9 million budget. But so now we've got this new moving part of technology. That footage has to be stored somewhere. There are laws around who has access to it and how long it has to be stored. And, you know, could that be a bonanza for a hacker who wanted to extort us? Because that's another thing. Whether you're a small business or a government, you know, ransomware now typically has kind of a twofold or two-prong approach. A, they want you to pay a ransom to decrypt the data and make your systems usable again. And then B, if you don't pay, they say, that's fine, we'll extort you by releasing this data on the internet. So who knows what's on the police body camera footage, right? And how that might impact someone negatively that happened to have an interaction with the police. So there's so many moving parts to this now. You know, that while we don't run our own 911 dispatch center, it's through the county, there's all kinds of sensitive data that needs to be protected. You know, it's a huge thing for cities at all levels. And if you look, you don't have to look too hard to find out that cities, especially small and medium-sized cities, where they don't have IT staff. They certainly don't have cybersecurity experts, and CISOs on staff are often targets because I don't think they understand the risks until and don't want to spend money on it until something bad happens. And you could see, you know, Fort Lauderdale, $1.2 million stolen. Dallas, I think they're up to like $9 million now. New Orleans, mm-hmm. there's a long list of municipal organizations that have been hit with pretty devastating cyber attacks. And in some cases, again, going back to my earlier point, Greg, our whole society is digital now. Is your local water plant secure? I don't think a lot of people realize the Oldsmar water plant in Florida was hacked, and the hackers were right. able to dump chemicals into the water system there. Now, thankfully, it was caught before anything went bad. But, you know, in a small government that might be running their own water plant or some other type of critical life supporting service like that, what happens if it gets hacked? So, you know, there is some connection there because, A, to some extent, with my former programmer hat on, we've tried to automate a lot of stuff for efficiency purposes. But B, that puts us at more risk of attack as well.
Well, and also, I think I'm spooling back, going back to my earlier in my career when I was the first CISO for Nashville Metropolitan Government of Nashville and Davidson County. I say first because they created the CISO position because of a breach. I have to say that because otherwise it's like, well, Greg, there was a breach on your watch. No. I was brought in afterwards. But it gets down to like education where you say that everybody's using technology. The basic core of the breach was that there was a laptop unencrypted that had sensitive information on it that it didn't need to have on there, like 330,000 voter records, including names, social security numbers. I mean, it made no sense to have that on there. And a whole cascade of physical control failures after that, and ending with the fact that the laptop wasn't encrypted. So, I mean, it's a big deal all around. And I think that governments were the last ones to realize we need to really, at the very least, yes, there's the technology aspect, but do we really need to have information in every place where we have it and to start getting rid of it in the proper manner, I guess. So I'm with you on that. I understand firsthand the connections between having the technology security risks with governments as well.
You did, if I could just elaborate on a point you made, which I often think is also overlooked, you know, businesses that we deal with on a regular basis, not just governments, tend to keep a lot of information because they can. And I'm not an attorney, but, you know, it would be a good idea for you as a business to take a hard look at your retention policy and get rid of stuff you don't need. I understand that sort of the innate desire to store stuff, and now storage is cheap, right? I can get a Synology and basically store stuff till I'm blue in the face. But that can come back to bite you not only in some type of breach, which ups the extortion potential, but also if you end up in a lawsuit, attorneys love to do discovery and get all of your data, which can also be extremely cumbersome to produce. So, you know, I'm always trying to encourage people, well, I get why you want to keep this stuff and it's cheap to do it now versus like back when I was in college. I remember, Greg, I found a magazine that I had back in school. It's like a 30-year-old PC magazine, and they're selling a 10-megabyte Winchester hard disk for $3,000. Yeah, it's like, wow, times have changed, you know? But, you know, people should look at how much data.
I got more storage in this remote, I think, you know.
It's scary, isn't it? Scary. And it get rid of stuff you don't need, right? Because it reduces your overall risk. And in the event you do end up in some kind of legal situation, you'll probably be glad you got rid of that stuff.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the best pieces of advice for businesses of all sizes. It's just basically, if you don't need it, just to reiterate what you said, but in opposite order, because I like to do something different. If you don't need it, get rid of it. You're taking the way I frame it as far as risk goes is that you're taking on risk with no return on investment. There's zero outside of like you like to feel good and you're lazy is what it boils down to.
I agree.
Well, being in cyber can be stressful. I imagine being in politics in some way, shape, or form can be stressful. I imagine that you probably need to step away from all this on occasion. And that might be a little bit hard to do in a small town because everybody knows you. Everybody's going to come up to you and ask you questions. But what's one of the things you do to get away from the stresses of cyber and being mayor of all things in Fort Wright?
Yeah, you're right. Both jobs can be very stressful. And, you know, while I'm pretty busy. I got four kids. The three older ones don't, you know, they're all on their own now. But, you know, I've got plenty of stuff going on in my life besides my real job and my fake job, as I like to call it, the mayor's gig. You know, probably the thing I like to do the most often to try to decompress is, thankfully, I live in a fairly secluded, wooded kind of area. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that I can literally see Cincinnati from my house in the winter, you know, it's still fairly wooded where I'm at. We have a hammock. I like to go out, get in the hammock, turn on a book, and just perhaps have an adult beverage on occasion and just literally lay in the hammock and do nothing. You know, just kind of decompress, listen to a book, listen to a podcast, maybe listen to some music, watch the leaves on the trees blow in the wind and try to forget about all this stuff for a while. That's my main source of trying to decompress is the hammock in the woods.
I think that I can't remember what they call it, but there is a terminology for decompressing in the woods. Just
Forest bath. Yes.
Okay, that sounds like familiar. I think I was thinking about a Japanese. Maybe it's a Japanese version of that, but forest bath sounds good as well too. And that's one of the things I like to do. It's like, particularly in the fall, there's something about the smell of falling leaves that I just absolutely love. I don't know what caused. You know, I was thinking about yesterday when I was taking out my dogs and their leaves all over our stairs and this and that, and I'm smelling the sweet smell of the basically dying, decomposing bodies. It's like, okay, that's kind of like, that kind of ruined the moment there for me. But, well, what about your future plans? You're not going to run for governor.
I'm not running for anything else. When this term, if I make it to the end of this term, when I'm done with politics for good. It's a cool honor and all, but I'm just tired of doing it.
Well, I mean, you've done more for public service than 99% of the people out there. And even though I don't live in your district, in your city, I appreciate your dedication to that.
I appreciate that. It's been a good run. It's a great place to live. Someone else can take the reins. You know, future plans. I've always been an IT nerd pretty much since I walked out the door. Like I said, I spent a lot of time in software engineering. I still like to do a little development, although I don't do that much of it anymore. I'm pretty passionate about cybersecurity. And I mean, I don't really have any plans to do anything different, primarily because A, I enjoy it. And B, I think the societal risk, right? There's a great article. I'd encourage anybody that watches this to check it out, called The Coming Software Apocalypse. It was in the Atlantic, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And it's not even really focused on cybersecurity per se, but it's pointing out again this sort of endemic risk as our society becomes increasingly dependent on software, right? Everything is smart. By the way, I hate the Internet of Things and have none of that stuff. But, you know, as we have more and more so-called smart devices, and this device talks to that device and a cascading error and this system brings down that system, you know, our whole society depends on this stuff. You got roughly 3 days of food in the supply chain. I could go on and on and on, right? One of the stories they point out in that article is, as software gets more complex and there's more and more of it that talks to other increasingly complex software, it's very difficult to test the stuff to make sure it actually does what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And one of the authors of the story, I had a great analogy. In the old days, if you worked in a power system, for example, right, you had mechanical switches and you could move the switches and see what happened and pretty much test every conceivable state that those switches could be in. So you would know what to expect, right?
Right.
Well, as a guy who wrote who knows how many millions of lines of code over 25 years of doing it literally every day and knowing how many bugs I personally created, right? Didn't do it on purpose. It wasn't like back doors. I'm just a human being. I make mistakes. Right. I get rushed. I don't test things the way they should be. You know, it makes me pause when I think about things like, okay, the whole power grid now is run off software. I'm going to get in an autonomous car and let a car drive me based on software? No, not me. Good luck with that. There's no autonomous cars in my future. I can tell you that.
Well, I think the problem's not going to be you driving one, but another one out on the road. That's what I worry about. You get all these autonomous cars on the road and I'm driving there by myself and somebody hacks them and they're all attacking the ones that, you know, are out there on their own.
So yeah, you're exactly right. Or it doesn't even have to be hacked. There's just a glitch in the software. Like out in San Francisco where they run up and put the orange cone on the hood and the car flips out? If you haven't seen that, check that out. Because
the orange code?
orange cone. They take like a construction cone and throw it on cone. The hood of the car, and the car doesn't know what to do because it's like, oh my God, orange cone, I gotta stop. Yeah, there's plenty of videos of this sort of thing out there.
I've heard of it, of them doing, what was it? It had to do something with like a particular type of sign that freaked them out. It wasn't a cone, but it was basically the same thing.
So I hate to be like a Luddite on this stuff, Greg, but you know, I'm not planning to do anything different because of the societal risk to us all, and hopefully trying to do some good out there and, you know, help people protect their businesses and help keep us all from being blown up through some sort of terrible cyber attack or software that just fails, you know.
Well, Dave, we appreciate your dedication to the industry and to society and to all that you've done to serve your community, and I appreciate you for spending the time with me and with us today. It was a fascinating conversation. We could have talked for another half hour easily.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And, you know, I'm always happy to talk about these things because, again, it's critical to our modern society that this stuff works right.
Yeah, I'll bring you back in a year and we'll talk about where we're at with regards to the AI phone scam. And that I bet you that that point in time, I bet you a virtual dollar that that'll be, you won't have that pause anymore. So, but we'll see.
I'd say you're probably right, Greg.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining and stay secure.